been here, I'm pretty sure, the entire time. And, you know, which is pretty cool, right? And, you know, he helped start this thing, you know, helped get it going, showed up regularly. And, you know, helps a lot of people, man, and he's helped me a lot. So, anyway, 30 years is a long, long time, you know, to do anything. So, let me introduce my friend Bill. Here you go. Yeah.
Is Bill an alcoholic?
Yeah.
Broke the mic. Yeah, it's hard to believe. It seems like it was yesterday. I was at my first AA meeting. I was 18 years old, and I was like, Jesus, what's next? The circus? You know, I mean, I just couldn't believe it. It just seemed like my life was going downhill fast. But, you know, I didn't know it was the best thing that's ever going to happen to me, you know, I had a long time of thinking I was never going to stay sober. I was just in and out, doing things my way, you know. And this group is kind of funny because I really didn't want to have anything to do with it, like everything good in my life pretty much. Didn't want to have anything to do with it, thought it was a bad idea, you know, and it's really kept me sober. And I got to meet Amanda, so that made it all worth it. But tonight, speaking for me tonight, I got a guy that's been keeping me sober for a couple years now. His name is Glenn, and with that, I'll give you Glenn.
I'm Glenn. I'm an alcoholic. And I really do appreciate Bill. He's my sponsor. I call him almost every day. And when I started calling him, it was about when I had a year of sobriety, and I was working at Red Lobster, and I was just complaining about my job every day, and it was endless shrimp, and I would just be like so mad because I'd work so hard and not make whatever the amount of money I think I should be making. And so I started calling Bill, and I think Bill was in the middle of the season Breaking Bad. So you could just tell when I'm talking to Bill, he would just be like, yep, yeah. And I'm just like, he's totally not listening to me, but I'm so crazy at this time that I really need to talk to somebody. I'm just like, I don't care. I just need to keep talking. Like, I'm just like, what would happen is I would get out of work and I would just be so ungrateful that I would just have this blanket of fear of just being alone for the rest of my life, just driving home. And, you know, a lot of good things have happened to me after a year of sobriety. You know, I had I got a nice condo for really cheap rent, and I thought that was going to be the solution. And then I thought that, but then I realized that I didn't have any furniture in my condo. And I thought that that's why nobody comes over. And so I actually started reaching out to people in AA, and I ended up getting two sets of couches. And once I got the two sets of couches, like nobody came over, you know. And I got a bigger TV, and then it was like just like a lonely place for me. And I realized that the solution was not the couches. And but what I did is I would call people constantly, and that's when I met Bill. And the one thing about Bill is that he's always answered his phone. And if he doesn't answer, he'll call you back. And that's something that I've always admired. And, you know, and also, like what Todd was saying, is showing up to AA. I think it's easy to rest on our laurels. And I know that for me, showing up to AA helps me, you know, more than like somebody that's new. They would be like, why would you need to go to AA after 5 years of staying sober? You shouldn't stay. You shouldn't have to keep going, you know. And they're like, thanks for showing up and helping us, you know. But realistically, I really need AA. If I don't go to AA, I'm going to get drunk for sure. But it's anyway, so I used to drink. I was 15 years old. Up until that point, I always looked forward to it, even though I didn't drink. I saw my dad get drunk, and my dad doesn't drink normally. And when he would drink, he would just be a little bit crazier, do things he normally wouldn't do, and he would allow me to stay up late. So, like, I always thought it was so cool when my dad would get drunk. And but it would be literally once every couple months, maybe. And you know, so I always thought it was a great thing. I went to Catholic school for 11 years, and I thought that you know, the solution was I needed to go to public school. And then I went to public school, and then I thought that this is not the solution. And so anyways, I went to Catholic school until 8th grade, and then which is 11 years counts like preschool, so if you're trying to do the math. I didn't fail any classes, but I pretty much got D's and C's throughout elementary and middle school. And then when I went to high school, I started getting really good grades. The teachers were saying that I was a good kid, and it was just because all the kids around me were really bad. But the thing is like I was still doing the same things. It's just that there was just a lot bigger classes and stuff. I mean, there was 12 kids in my 8th grade, so it was very easy to be singled out. And I thought that was the problem. You know, my teacher was singling me out. I told my teacher that she was trying to, she was calling me out in front of the class, saying, "You think, you know, like kind of like almost like AA stuff is like, if you're having problems with everybody, then maybe the problem's with you." And I'm like, "No, the problem is you, and that's why I hate you." And that was in 8th grade before drinking, so I don't know if I can blame that on drinking, you know. So, you know, always been selfish. I've always been called selfish throughout my whole life. You know, it's been the one character trait I've held. And, you know, so I, you know, it was weird, like for Christmas, my sister's older than me, and I'm like the baby of the family, and I think she would get like two or three gifts, and I'd have like gifts crowded around me. Like it would just be like they'd be like over my head, and I would just think like they love her more, you know. And I would just totally put the blame, like never happy, never good enough, it's never enough, you know. And you know, my parents did the best they could. They're you know, I would consider us middle class, and you know, and you know, they did everything they could. So I started going to public school. I didn't know anybody. So I was outside of the school district, but my parents wanted me to go to the school with my sister, and she was on the volleyball team, so I would stay after with her, which pretty much forced me into being the volleyball manager, the girls' volleyball manager, and which was pretty depressing. You know, I just thought that this is just a bad deal the whole time, and but then I got, you know, resentful once they didn't give me like any recognition at the end of the year that I was a volleyball manager. And you know, so you know I've always worked. I think I got a job working under the table as a dishwasher at 13 years old, and you know, just always thought that you know, that it was, you know, that you have to work for it, and that's really what it came like. Even when I was drinking, I had to work more to drink more, because it just didn't work out. If I didn't have any money, I couldn't drink the way I wanted to drink. So I always worked. And which there is this one really scary part in the 12 and 12 that I read once in a while. And it talks about, on page one, I think it's 120, but it talks about like how the alcoholic will save enough money to where they will be, where in their mind, they don't even know they're doing it. And then they go into, a bigger relapse. And I'm just thinking like, holy shit, you know, like this impending doom. Like, I hope this just, but it's always been like in my thing. It's just like, I always just work. And I always think that's the solution, but realistically, like I'm right where I'm supposed to be. You know, I've gotten to where I've gotten so crazy over work, whether I'm drinking or not. You know, and or just even when I was drinking, what happened is I started my own lawn business, and I would drink about noontime, and what would happen is I would have to mow 7 days a week because of that, because I couldn't work a full day. And I would feel like I would like act like I'm abused because I work so much, but realistically, it's like I can't finish a full work day. I was like, I'm working 7 days a week, And then, you know, I have a girlfriend that's mad about because I don't have enough money because I'm drinking it all the way. And, you know, she's just like, I'm just telling her, I'm working 7 days a week. What else do you want from me? You know, but, like, I'm literally, like, driving around looking at yards, and it'll be, like, knee-high, and I'm like, yep, not going to mow that one. You know, just driving right by, you know. And there's just a lot of, I don't know where I was going with that. But anyways, so really what it started was I started mowing with these guys that were, one was 38, one was 40, and another one was, I think, 48. And these are guys that I'm really looking up to. I'm 18 years old and drinking and smoking, pot with them every day. And these are the guys I really look up to. And they're all getting divorces. And none of their wives want them at home because we're just, like, totally, like, doing the same thing. Like, we're just the same way that whenever I actually had my, like, later on I started my own business. But then it was when I started that habit of just cutting out early and coming, you know, starting to drink early. And always having that idea of, like, tomorrow's going to be a better day. Tomorrow I'm going to mow 20 yards and it's going to be an amazing day. And that day rarely ever came. And then once I would hit that day, I'd always be like, look, see, I did it, you know. And there would be, like, many, many months without days off, but it would just be just torture, you know. Like, I turned into an insomniac towards the end of my drinking because of the drinking. And then starting at, like, say, 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and then I'd drink till, you know, 11 in the at night, pretty much till I pass out. And I would wake up at, like, 2 or 3 in the morning worried about all this work I have to do. Like, all these things that I haven't, I'm, like, trying to figure out how to fix them at 3 o'clock in the morning, like, thinking that if I could just mow at 3 o'clock in the morning, all my problems would be solved. And, you know, so I started, you know, just losing sleep, just, like, and I couldn't figure out. I had no idea it was from worrying. Like, there's, like, nobody to bounce things off of. It's just, like, just my thinking trying to solve its problems, you know, which is the worst place for me. And my last day of drinking was it was no different than any other. It was actually the day before Memorial Day, and because we had been drinking all weekend, and it was just like one of those days, and I had an angry girlfriend, and I like how, like, there's a lot of people that say, they come in on their own, because I definitely didn't come in on my own, even though I didn't go to treatment. But it was definitely not on my own. Somebody was really mad at me, and I was just like, whatever I need to do to get out of this problem, or there was really no other options. Like, I didn't have any other options when I came in. I didn't have any other answers, really. It's because I would always have this thing like, you're mad at me because you have to work in the morning, but I can do my own thing and do all these things. And there was always an excuse of why I could drink that night or why I could, get away with it. But that night when she was, you know, yelling at me, I didn't have any, even when I was drunk, I didn't have any solution. It was like, I don't know why I drink the way I drink. And the one thing I was always really good at is getting out of trouble. I mean, I could always just like, and when I told him I was telling the truth, I'd be like, I'm never going to drink again, you know? And that night, I just didn't have any answers. And then I thought that I could do the same thing the next day. And my girlfriend is like real quiet. TV's not on in the morning. And I'm just like, I walk out and she just doesn't even talk to me. I'm like, oh shit, you know? So like, what am I going to do to get out of this one? And then I'm just like, just sitting there quietly waiting for her to start talking to me. And then she's like, just starts rattling off, like, you need help, you know, you need treatment, and or AA or something, you know. And I don't think she had, her intentions were not for me to say yes. But my way of getting out of trouble that day was, yeah, AA is just an hour long. I can do that, you know. So I decided to go to AA. And I went down to this meeting. You know, there was two other guys, and they were just pretty much telling me how to stay sober. I've never really worked well for people to tell me what to do. And when they were telling me, I was just like, I don't know. This is just, you know, this just might, this, I don't, this just doesn't sound right. And but at the same time, I don't want to drink. Like, I got to the point where I was like, I just can't drink because she's really pissed. I need to figure out something. And so then I went to a noon meeting, and then I went to another meeting right down the street from my place. And the funny thing is like, I was just like, there's no way there's a meeting in New Tampa, you know. And then it was like literally right next, like, here's my apartment, right next door was was this meeting place. And I go there, it's a men's meeting, and they are not talking to me. Well, they talk to me, but they weren't like telling me what to do. They were just telling me like how their life has changed. And I didn't think they were like really, because it was an open discussion, I didn't think they were like telling me, you know. They were just talking, you know. And then I was just kind of like thinking, like, these guys, some of these guys are like, were like really bad, and some of them weren't so bad. So you know, and I think I saw one person that was a little younger. I think they were like 20, 22. I was 24 at the time. And just the idea of just knowing that that guy was doing it, he had 9 months, was just like, if that guy can do it, I can do it. And I don't think I ever saw that guy ever again. But it was just like, for me, that was my hope. Like, I was just like, if that guy can do it, I can do it, you know. And you know, so I start getting these numbers. They give me the where and when, with all these numbers on the back of the list, or on the back of the where and when. And I'm like all about staying sober. Like, I'm like, all I have to do is one day at a time. You know, just one day at a time. All I have to do is stay sober till 12 o'clock tonight, and I'll be okay. And so I mean, they gave me this big book, and I started reading it. And when I went to high school, I would cheat the whole time. Like, there was no, like, reading books. Like, I would like try my hardest to read a book, and I would get past like the first 2-3 pages, and I would just be like, I'm not going to do this. And I'd be like, I'll do it tomorrow, like I've always done. And and I would get to the class, and I would just cheat the whole time. And I managed to have good grades in high school because I could cheat the whole time. And so I ended up just being like, just read this freaking book, you know. And then because this is what they say, just read this book and one day at a time. And then what I did is I just said, I don't have to read this whole book today. I just have to read 10 pages or read one chapter. And that's what I did. I read 10 pages a day. And but the second day of sobriety, when I was all about staying sober the first day, the second day did not sound like a good idea. It was like, I don't know about that. This is overreacting, you know. She just needs to get off my case, kind of thing. And but what I remember is being all about staying sober that first day. And so I figured, well, maybe I should call these numbers on this back of this list. I called about 5 or 6 numbers. Nobody answered. And I was in the middle of this yard. I was cleaning it up. And because, I mean, at the time I was just like it was just such a gift that I could actually just have like 15 more minutes of just like forcing myself to just finish up this yard before I go drink. And by the time I was done, I had about 3 or 4 phone calls. And I talked to one person, and then I talked to another one, and it was this guy who is, he had 2 years of sobriety. Didn't know much about him, but I knew he had 2 years, and he said he was atheist. And I was just like, well, if that guy can do it without God, I can do it, you know, because I was just like kind of like against the whole like God thing. I mean, I went to Catholic school for 11 years, and I thought that I had heard enough God that I could, you know, that I didn't need it. You know, I've already heard what you guys have to say, so I don't need any more. And so I ended up talking to this guy, he's atheist, and he's telling me how he, you know, stays sober through AA and all this stuff. And it was just kind of the hope that I needed. And I believe that was God doing for me what I can't do for myself. And, you know, so was that thank you? Okay, sorry. So I'm like, all right, so that, and then I go to the, so I start mowing this other yard, and then I feel like drinking again, and then I get this other call from this other guy, and he's like, hey, you don't have to mow. If you don't feel like mowing a yard, you don't have to, but you don't have to drink either. And then I was just like, well, that's an idea. I don't have to drink today, you know? And just like this, like, reasoning that I could not think of myself. Like, it's just like, all you have to do is not drink today. And he was like, you know, just take a nap and then go to the 6 o'clock meeting. And I was like, that sounds like a great idea, because I really don't want to mow. And so I ended up doing that, taking the suggestion. And, you know, and that guy, I really, you know, anytime, those two guys, you know, anytime I see him, I just remember my first and second day, and I'm just glad that I met those people. And, you know, I hung on for dear life, and I was just talking about it before the meeting, and the group I went to, and this very well may not be the truth, but the way I saw it is that a lot of times it was hard to find people to hang out after the meeting. So it was what I've heard it called is like a drive-through AA, you know, like go there, get the meeting, and leave, and go home. And for me, I was 24 years old. I'm just like sitting crazy in my head. I'm just like, this is the rest of my life, you know, just sitting in this AA meeting and just hanging on for dear life. It's like, if I could just get through today, it'll be okay. And I'm just like, and my thinking is that this is going to be the rest of my life. This exact feeling of like one day at a time, hanging on, you know, just hold, you know, and thank God that's not the case. But so what I started doing is, you know, going to this meeting, started meeting more people. And I found alcohol. I found a young people's group, which was a huge group. It's still a big group. It was huge. It was like 150 people, and you know, it's very easy to feel like an outsider. But the one thing I know is just that I just kind of committed to just going, you know. And then and the other thing is, my girlfriend decided to break up with me at a month of sobriety. Because I had my foot in sobriety, and that's what she said. And I was just totally like about to go drink. Like, it was like, this is my time to drink. It's like, this girl that I'm getting sober for is telling me that she doesn't want to be with me anymore, so it's time to go drink. And I start driving to Peabody's, and you know, and I think to myself that if I drink right now, I don't know if I'll ever have another month of sobriety ever again, because this month was the hardest month I've ever been through, you know, like, this was like really like, you know, so I figured that if I go to a meeting, I can go to the bar afterwards. And so I get to the meeting, don't even get inside, I start bawling, you know, thinking that this girl is just the end of my life, you know. And you know, so I start you know, talk to this guy. He had I think he might have four months or something like that, which is, the only reason why I say the 4 months is just because I run into so many people that say they can't help somebody, but this guy is exactly what I need to hear. It's like him just being like, you don't have to worry about that today. You just go to this meeting and just don't drink today. And you know, and I was calling my sponsor, not Bill, but it was a different sponsor, every day. And it was a very big roll of the dice if he was going to answer. And it was like, you know, at like 3 months, I think it went like a month without answering my phone call. But I literally did call him every single day because I was going crazy. And I was always told, call your sponsor if you feel like you're going crazy. And I would call him every time and he would never answer. And I would just be like, all right, well, I'm doing what they're saying. I'm just going to these meetings. But what it did is I actually started meeting more people in AA, because I guess hindsight, I guess I was starting to meet more people than just my sponsor. And I met my second to last, before Bill's sponsor or whatever, and then he, whatever, anyways, he really got me into service work. I started doing juvenile detox, which I loved. It was like the worst thing ever because I knew that those guys never wanted to stay sober. It was like, because when I was 16, there was no way I'm staying sober. Nobody could tell me that I was an alcoholic. And but what happened was I was actually in family counseling when I was 16, and the doctor said, "You're an alcoholic and you're the black sheep of the family." And my parents are like, "You never have to go there again." You know? That it was but the one thing I know is that I knew I was an alcoholic. Like, but the thing is like, was my life unmanageable? Like, is really the question. Like, the idea of like being the person living under the bridge or anything like that. But I found out that my life was slowly deteriorating away. And but anyways, the craziest thing is the juvenile detox. Excuses are the same excuses that you go and you hear at the adult detox, which is like very humbling, you know, because these people at detox, which I love detox, and I think it's, if anybody, I would tell anybody to go to detox, because for me, I there's just like, if you go there, you'll hear something like just recently I went and I heard this guy, he was talking about having 8 years of sobriety. And he had this great business. He got it through sobriety. And what happened is that he put it first in front of his sobriety, and which could easily be done. I mean, just to say it, you know, the ego tells you that I have responsibilities now that I'm in AA. And the responsibility is not, you know, helping myself. That's what I know about AA. But what I'll hear is that I have responsibilities as in a business, so I don't need to go to AA. The one thing that got me this business, you know, and I hear it all the time in different forms, but I hear it almost every meeting, and the thing is, I know that could be me. Like, I always think to myself, that could easily be me, and I always keep it in the front of my mind. But the people into detoxes. Are firsthand when they were doing all the right things, and then they put something else in front of their sobriety, and it's something that I really need to see. It's like a humbling thing for me, and I don't even know where I was going with that story, but anyway, so my sponsor got me into service work. I started doing detoxes, started you know, having a home group. Finding one thing to do there, which is really important because I feel like I'm a part of when I start doing it. And the other thing about that is that I'm actually able to meet people. Like, if I'm greeting at the door, I'm kind of forced to talk to these people around me, you know. And then I start to like actually get some friendships, and then I actually enjoy coming back to that place. And then you know, and. It's also something that actually helps the meeting grow in itself. But I mean, I don't know where else I'm going with this, but the main thing I know is the one thing I do really admire about Bill, my sponsor, is that you know, having 30 years of sobriety, he still does the same things I would tell a newcomer. You know, I would be like, you need to go to meetings, and you need to call your sponsor, and. And the one thing he keeps telling me to do is meditation, and I struggle daily. but the one thing about meditation is that as long as I'm attempting, and I sometimes my meditation's 1 minute, and sometimes it can, maybe if I'm lucky, last for 5 minutes. You know, but the fact that I'm attempting to do it is something better than if just walking past it and say I'm never going to do it. Kind of like the prayer thing, which resentments is what brings me closer to God. That's how I found my higher power. I started praying for the person I hated, which was the girl, and and I started praying for this girl, and I just prayed for her happiness. So I was like, God, just whether it's with me or without me, it's no longer my problem. Please just take this problem you know, just let her be happy doing with whatever she's doing. And for that moment, you know, a weight was lifted off of my shoulders, and I know I didn't have that problem anymore. For about 5 minutes, and You know, immediately I get home and I just start complaining that she's sleeping in my bed, but everything else in the house is hers. I'm sleeping on this blow-up mattress that's hers. And every night I would wake up, or every morning I'd wake up and it was deflated. But the only thing I can hold on to is that that bed is my bed. And I can't hear that it's that, like, so I had to tell my sponsor, and then he was just like, you know, the only thing in that house is your bed. And then I started changing my way of thinking. But it's only through talking to somebody else that that I could change that way of thinking. And I think anything else from here on out is just rambling. So that's all I have. Thank you. Thank you.